and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great hour for you today. I'm obviously going to catch up on the latest news, the breaches, but our deep dive, I watched all 3 days nonstop of Mike Lindell, aka My Pillow Guy. I watched his entire cyber symposium to review the evidence that he said he had for basically hacking the election. You don't want to miss this. I dive deep into that and I spend quite a bit of time doing it. So check it out, stick with me, and as always, let's start with the news. And in Apple and Google news, the United States government is actually trying to rein in Apple and Google's respective app stores. Now, here's what's going on. This is coming from Reuters. A bipartisan trio of senators introduced a bill that would rein in the app stores of companies that they say exert too much market control, which is essentially Apple and Alphabet's Google. Now, Democratic Senators Richard Blumenthal and Amy Klobuchar teamed up with Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn to sponsor this bill, which would bar big app stores from requiring app providers to use their payment system. It would also prohibit them from punishing apps that offer different prices or conditions through another app store or payment system. And to quote Senator Blumenthal, "I found this predatory abuse of Apple and Google so deeply offensive on so many levels. Their power has reached a point where they are impacting the whole economy in stifling and strangling innovation." Now, Senator Blumenthal said that he expects companion legislation in the House of Representatives very soon. The stakes are high for Apple, whose App Store anchors its $53.8 billion annually service business as basically the smartphone market has matured. Now, Apple said that its App Store was, quote, "an unprecedented engine of economic growth and innovation, one that now supports more than 2.1 million jobs across all 50 states. Google, interestingly enough, declined to comment, but a spokesperson for Google cited previously that in company statements that Android devices often come preloaded with two or more different app stores, and that sellers can allow downloads without using Apple's Play Store. Now, the bill won praise from Spotify, Epic Games, and Tile. Tile makes those tags to find lost objects, and obviously they were not a fan when Apple launched a rival product. I think they call it Apple Tags, earlier this year. Now, a similar law revision actually has been introduced in South Korea as well, and Google said last year that it would enforce certain in-app payment methods basically there in South Korea and receive 30% commission fees from non-game digital content. Apple's control over the apps on the store and the 15 to 30% commissions on digital sales have come under regulatory scrutiny. A federal judge is reviewing testimony to rule on an antitrust lawsuit by Epic Games, creator of Fortnite. So here we are. Epic Games also sued Google for its App Store practices, as have a big group of state attorneys general, alleging that it unlawfully worked to maintain a monopoly for its App Store for Android phones. And so we'll see where this goes, but this will be absolutely interesting. This is definitely more damaging for Apple, because Apple's iPhone system, basically including the iPad, runs on an operating system known iOS, and like macOS, that's a closed ecosystem. And so if you want to publish or get anything installed into your iPhone, an app, you have to go through Apple's App Store. Google is correct, but there's an interesting hitch in Google's logic here. That is correct. So, for example, if you have a Samsung smartphone, you might have the Google Play Store, but you can also download apps from Samsung. You can download apps from Amazon. And there's a plethora of tiny app stores out there where people say, hey, we've got, you know, different versions of this or whatever that is. You do not have to go to Google's App Store to download and install apps on an Android. But, and here's the big but, Google recommends that you do, and here's why. Google has stated that the vast majority, something like 99% of all infections of Android phones are outside of the Google Play Store, meaning you're going to that third-party store, you're downloading that app, and you're essentially rolling the dice. And that's something that I think is an important distinction, because on one hand, they're saying, well, you can go anywhere and download apps from, you know, wherever. You don't need us to get that. You know, that's no big deal. But on the same token, they're saying, well, if you go to those other app stores, you're probably going to get infected, because if you stay with us, you know, you're not going to get infected. So which is it? And I think that's something that they're going to have to answer for in court as well. There's a lot of evidence and statements they've made to that. But anyway, that is your Apple and Google news of the week, and we'll see what happens. And in Facebook news, and I am not a fan of this, Facebook apparently doesn't want transparency and misinformation tracked on their platform. Now, here's what's going on, and just I think this speaks for itself. Here we are. So this is coming from The Verge. Facebook has banned the personal accounts of academics who researched ad transparency and the spread of misinformation on social media, basically on Facebook specifically. Now, Facebook says the group violated its terms of services by scraping user data without their permission, but the academics say they are being silenced for exposing problems on Facebook's platform. Now, the researchers were part of the NYU Ad Observatory. I've actually talked about them here in a past episode. I want to say like a year ago or so. This is a project that was created to examine the origin and spread of political ads on Facebook. As the group explained in a post in May, their aim is to uncover who pays for political ads and how they're being targeted. Such work has important implications for understanding the spread of disinformation on Facebook, as the company Facebook does not fact-check political ads. Now, to help their work, the researchers created a browser plugin called Ad Observer, which automatically collects data on what political ad users are being shown and why those ads are being targeted to them. As per their website, the plugin does not collect any personal identifiable information, including usernames, Facebook ID numbers, or friend lists. Basically, you have to opt in to do this. And so those permissions are clearly laid out. So Facebook's argument falls flat. If I opt in to say, yeah, take my information, then they're not scraping it. I'm giving them that permission. Now, data collected by Ad Observer is then made publicly available to researchers and journalists who use the information to reveal trends and problems on Facebook's platform. Stories directly resulting from this work include Facebook's failure to disclose who pays for some political ads and how far-right misinformation is more engaging than misinformation from center or left. Basically, everything from far-right to far-left is on Facebook, but what they're saying is this is more engaging, compelling, gets more likes, clicks, views, traction, et cetera, on the far right as opposed to the far left. Now, Facebook offers some of this information voluntarily through its ad library, but not all. So for example, it doesn't share data about how ads are targeted based on users' interests, but people can find this for themselves by clicking the ads that they've shown. And this is the data that is essentially collected by NYU. Facebook does provide this information on ad targeting through a special research program they have called FORT, F-O-R-T, but it's controlled by Facebook and filtered. And so there you go. They're saying they banned these researchers because they violated Facebook's terms of services, but the Ad Observer plugin collected data about Facebook users who did not install or consent to the collection, which is what they're claiming. But I literally have to go to the website. I literally have to install it myself. I literally have to basically say, yes, I will do this. And so basically, Facebook is suggesting the researchers are collecting data about private individuals without consent. But as reported, like I said, that's a problem. And Facebook, I guess, was technically referring to advertisers' accounts, not the actual users themselves. The Verge reached out to Facebook to confirm all of this, but Facebook declined to comment. And I think we have to have a very serious discussion on Facebook advertising, especially when it comes to political campaigns. It came to the point where LinkedIn and Twitter basically said, no, political advertising is officially done. It's so small of our revenue because obviously we're huge companies. And Facebook said, nah, we'll still take it. We'll take the 12 million or 20 million or whatever it was a year. And so there you go. And they don't fact check them. So figure that one out. But that is your Facebook / political ad news of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for Breaches of the Week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I am more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, Let's begin.
And this week's data breaches are just like every other time I've been here on the air talking about data breaches. It's been absolutely nuts out there. But we actually have some rather concerning evidence and information about the U.S. government. I'm going to get to that in the final segment here. So stick around for that. Don't tune me out that long. Now, with that, I'd like to thank the following people that sent me this information, and that's Jason Dance, Jacqueline Wolf, David Walker, Barrett Peterson, and Chris Fallon. Thank you so very much. And again, please keep sending me those tips. It's always appreciated and really helps me out. And with that, let's start in Indiana with Eskenazi Health. They got crippled by a ransomware attack that began between 3:30 and 4:30 a.m. a couple weeks ago Wednesday, according to the Daily Beast. By 8 a.m., Eskenazi Health was actually turning ambulances away and diverting patients to other hospitals as a result of that ransomware incident. And so hopefully they're back on their feet by now as I'm talking to you. This happened a couple of weeks ago from when you're listening to this. But obviously if they turn somebody away by virtue or in an ambulance and that person dies, those basically they're criminals guilty of murder. And I think that's just absolutely unconscionable. And with that, let's move on because we don't have time to dwell, unfortunately. We're heading to Sioux Falls, South Dakota for Sanford Health. This is where their headquarters are. And Sanford Health is a system that includes 46 hospitals and care locations in 26 states and 10 countries. And in a statement about a week ago or so, they got hit with a cyber attack as well. Sanford Health did not confirm whether they were a victim of ransomware, but their president and CEO, Bill Gasson, confirmed to the Daily Beast that they were working to contain the impact. And in both the Sanford Health case and Eskenazi Health case in Indiana, patient data and employee data were not affected, according to officials from both groups. Moving on, let's head on over to Italy and talk about energy group ERG. They reported only a few minor disruptions affecting their IT technology infrastructure following a ransomware attack as well. They're a renewable energy company in Italy, and they only refer to the incident as a hacker attack, but local publications are reporting the attack looks like it's a Lockbit 2.0 ransomware attack. Lockbit has been rather prolific lately, so we'll see where that goes. But heads up to you, ERG users in Italy, and I do actually have some listeners in Italy. So with that, I want to give you an update on the Zoom privacy class action lawsuit. They are set to pay $85 million to settle the class action lawsuit that alleged that Zoom lied about offering end-to-end encryption. And they did, according to the Citizen Labs in Toronto, Canada. Now, the settlement still has yet to be approved, but once it is, you may be eligible to receive a small payout if you use Zoom, especially if you are paying for a professional account. Now, Zoom's proposed agreement is currently under review by the U.S. District, basically the judge Lucy Koh, and now Zoom basically is the center of controversy, or has been the center of controversy, after the FTC or Federal Trade Commission discovered that Zoom was deceiving users about their security. And in 2016 and 17, Zoom had advertised that it had complete end-to-end encryption, meaning nobody could look at or analyze your Zoom meeting except for you and the people that were in it. But the fact was, is that they didn't. They only began offering that support of October of 2020. And even then, I consider that suspect, given what Zoom is. So if you use Zoom, heads up to you, you may be eligible for compensation. Moving on. Let's talk about 35 million residents across Chicago, San Diego, and Los Angeles. And listeners, heads up, because I'm in all of those markets. Now, the Elasticsearch database was left exposed, or rather, an Elasticsearch database was left exposed without any security authentication, meaning you could have pulled it up in a web browser and viewed all of this information. But the owner of this database hasn't been identified just yet. But basically, 35 million of us had exposure of gender, full name, ethnicity, date of birth, marital status, email addresses, contact information, residential addresses, and furthermore, the information also contained other exploitable demographic information such as the assets you might own, shopping habits, media preferences, pet ownership details, hobbies and interests, estimated income, and net worth. So we don't know where it came from, but heads up to you if you're in Chicago, San Diego, or LA. Moving on, let's talk about the country of Estonia, because a man from the city of Tallinn there was arrested about a couple weeks ago under suspicion that he had exploited a government photo transfer vulnerability to download ID scans of 286,438 Estonians from their identity documents database. Now, the attacker was apprehended on July 23rd following a Cybercrime Bureau of the National Criminal Police and RIA joint investigation after RIA was alerted to basically a higher than usual number of queries. And here we are. So if you're a citizen of Estonia in that database, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about the Cybersecurity Atlas project that was launched in 2018, and it's basically a yellow pages kind of contact list of European organizations with cybersecurity expertise. Now, the European Commission is investigating a breach of its Cybersecurity Atlas project after a copy of the site's back-end database was put up for sale on an underground cybercrime forum this past Monday. Now, a threat actor posted a thread on an underground cybercrime forum claiming to have obtained access to the entire Cybersecurity Atlas database, and they were willing to sell that over the platform Discord, and by all accounts, it looks correct. And if you were going to put together a cybersecurity yellow pages, you might want to secure it, Europe. And with that, let's move on. Now, we're going to be talking next about the basically a vendor or creator of motherboards known as Gigabyte. Some of you may actually be listening to me through a motherboard that was made by them. Basically, they're from Taiwan, and they got hit with a ransomware attack as well. And the attackers are currently threatening to release more than 112 gigabytes of business data on the dark web unless the company agrees to their the ransom demands. They got hit by the RansomX or EXX ransomware gang. And so hopefully Gigabyte is back on their feet now. Moving on, let's talk about the Lithuanian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, because they declined to comment about the authenticity of email files allegedly stolen from their network and offered for sale on a trading forum. Basically, this case supposedly consists of 1.6 million emails containing the conversations and documents that are marked as sensitive and highly sensitive in nature for that government. This is actually getting interesting. Now, if the description of what they have is accurate, the emails basically should also have attachments with them as well. The forum user made bold claims basically to drum up interest in this data, and they claim that the correspondence that they have contains secret negotiations, a conspiracy against U.S. President Biden, and preparation for war with Belarus. That was interesting. I had no idea Lithuania and Belarus were at war. Somebody correct me, but there you go. So he may actually get that sold. So there you go. Moving on. Let's talk about a website called Senior Advisor. This apparently is a review website for senior citizens. I'm not exactly sure what is being reviewed on that site, though. Now, the personal data of more than 3 million United States senior citizens was exposed in a security oversight by Senior Advisor, and researchers at the security firm WizCase discovered that a misconfigured Amazon bucket meant that the data that they found or was exposed included users, surnames, emails, phone numbers as well. The data also belonged to people marked as leads or potential customers, and the WizCase team said they found over 2,000 quote-unquote scrubbed reviews from which the user's sensitive information had been wiped or redacted. However, those reviews had a lead ID that would then basically put them back to the post author, meaning if you're using Senior Advisor and you had your information redacted from a review you did, they still know on the back end who was redacted. Just the world, as we're looking at your review, they couldn't see it. So if you use Senior Advisor, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about Japanese manufacturer Murata. This is actually an update on their data breach because they just released an apology for the leak of thousands of files this past June that contained bank account information for employees and business partners of the company. Norio Nakajima, the CEO of Murata Manufacturing, released a statement apologizing for the incident on June 28 when a subcontractor downloaded a project management data file containing 72,460 pieces of information. Now, more than 30,000 documents contain business partner information like company names, addresses, associated names, phone numbers, email addresses, bank account numbers, etc. The companies are based, their partner information. These companies are based in Japan, China, Philippines, Malaysia, Singapore, the United States, and the European Union. But the enterprises, quote, subject to customer information are only China and the Philippines. Also, over 41,000 1,000 documents about employees were in the leak as well, containing names, addresses, and bank account numbers. These employees were based in the company's offices in Japan, China, the Philippines, Singapore, the United States, and the European Union. So heads up if you work for Murata Manufacturing. Moving on, let's talk about Accenture. This is the massive consulting firm here in the United States. They basically experienced a ransomware attack. They also got hit with LockBit, and apparently LockBit is requesting $50 million as a ransom payment, and basically they will start releasing data if they don't get it. Now, precisely how the attackers infiltrated Accenture's network remains to be determined. However, preliminary evidence suggests it could be an inside job. The LockBit website hosting this had a message from the attacker, and I quote, "These people are beyond privacy and security. I really hope that their services are better than what I saw as an insider. If you're interested in buying some databases, reach us." Wow. So it looks like an Accenture employee actually might be the one that did this. I have no doubt law enforcement around the globe is all over that one. Moving on, let's talk about T-Mobile, the large cellular carrier here in the United States. They say that they're investigating a forum post that claims to be selling just a ton of personal data. Now, the forum post itself doesn't mention T-Mobile by name, but the seller told Motherboard by Vice News that they've obtained data related to over 100 million people and that the data came from T-Mobile servers. This data includes social security numbers, phone numbers, names, physical addresses, unique IMEI numbers, and driver's license information. And Motherboard by Vice News has seen samples of the data and confirmed that it is accurate. And they were able to align it up with T-Mobile customers. So heads up to you, if you use T-Mobile as your mobile provider, it looks like you might have been exposed. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a phishing campaign that is targeting Office 365 users. If you use Office 365 in your personal or business life, heads up to you. An active phishing campaign is using a crafty combination of legitimate-looking original sender email addresses, spoofed display sender addresses that contain the target usernames and domains, and display names that mimic legitimate services to try and slip through email filters. Now, the sender's addresses contain variations of the word referral. So, for example, if you had like a google.com, it would be like goo referral google, oogle.com, you know, or, you know, referral.net or iReferral or something along those lines. These emails are made to look like they point to a document stored on a Microsoft SharePoint server, which is a web-based collaborative platform that integrates with Microsoft Office and includes Microsoft branding, meaning the spam looks exactly like Microsoft. It looks very legitimate, but it's sending you a file that if you click it, it might download basically a virus in your computer or give out your information. Obviously, a very serious issue. So if somebody is sending you a file and you know you're expecting that, I would still double check to make sure that it is legitimate. That's always good practice. Moving on, let's talk about Italy's Lazio region. They likely suffered a ransomware attack. The entire region, which I'm guessing is similar to a state here in the United States. I don't know the country of Italy that well. I apologize. But basically, it disabled the region's IT systems, including the Salute Lazio health portal used for COVID-19 vaccine registration. Now, typically, RansomX threat actors gain access to a victim's network, and then they spread laterally through the network while stealing sensitive documents to be used as extortion. So it's obviously a huge problem. Moving on, let's talk about Wawa. This is the supermarket chain here in the United States. This is an update from their data breach because a federal judge has given preliminary approval to a settlement that would require Wawa to pay customers up to $9 million in gift cards and cash after a massive data breach exposed customer payment card numbers, meaning your credit cards got exposed. Now, the majority of funds Wawa would pay to customers, up to $8 million, would be in $5 or $15 Wawa gift cards. According to court filings, up to $1 million more could be used to reimburse consumers with cash payments up to $500 if they can show actual financial losses linked to the data breach. So heads up to you, if you shop at Wawa, you may be entitled to compensation. And finally, let's talk about finally, because we have two finalies for you today. And the first one we're going to be talking about is ransomware demands. Now, this is coming basically from a new report from Palo Alto Networks' Unit 42. If you recall, I interviewed basically the deputy director of Unit 42, Jen Miller Osborne, last year during the pandemic. And they are usually on the forefront of finding the latest and newest attacks. So it was a really cool interview. Now, according to Unit 42, The average ransomware payment demanded by cyber criminals is now topping out at $5.3 million a demand. That's the average, which is a 518% increase from last year. Meanwhile, the average ransom paid out reached $570,000, which is an 82% increase over 2020's average of $312,000. Basically, if you didn't know, you might get that ransom for $5.3 million on average, but on average, you can negotiate that down to $570,000. Some people see $5 million, think they've got to pay it. We negotiate. That's how that works. Also, quadruple extortion is now becoming prevalent, and let me talk about the different types of extortion that we have before I get to quadruple. So typically, the first level of extortion is they lock out your files, and if you don't pay them, they're not going to unlock your files. If you've got good backups, you can just restore from backup. There you go. Sucks. No harm, no foul, though. Double extortion is when they, one, lock out the backups like I just, or lock up the data like I just mentioned, and two, actually copy the data out and threaten to expose it to the world if you don't pay them. So that really good backup you have might restore you, so you don't need that. But if all of your personal information or your client's personal information is going to get out there, then obviously that's a huge problem that a lot of people have with this. And so they will go ahead and pay that to make sure that they are protecting themselves or their clients. Triple extortion is when basically the attackers look through the data and go ahead and see, oh, hey, we've got data on another really, you know, important company or more expensive company. And so we're going to attempt to ransom them as well. And so that's what's known as a supply chain hit. So as a perfect example, there was a Taiwanese manufacturer of laptops and products that Apple computers, makers of the iPhone, use. And they got hit. The Taiwanese company got hit. They got basically their data locked out and extorted. It got dumped into a leak site. But the attackers realized, hey, we have the actual design schematics internally for Apple. So they went to Apple and said, hey, you guys have a lot of money. We want some of that money, because if you don't, we're going to put out all of your design schematics. That is triple extortion. And so take all of that and add quadruple extortion to that, which is harassment. Now they are starting to contact organizations, customers, business partners, employees, all of that, you know, as I mentioned in triple extortion. But on top of that, they are now launching denial of service attacks that shut down your website on top of that.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.